Welcome to The Other Side of the Plate, brought to you by Feast, families empowered and supporting treatment of eating disorders. This podcast is for moms, dads, and caregivers searching for answers, the kind that can feel so hard to find when your loved one has an eating disorder. I'm Jenny, and along with my co-host Laura, we're here as caregivers with lived experience who supported our loved ones through an eating disorder. Together, we'll share personal insights, connect you with professionals, and point you toward helpful resources. And as we say at Feast, we're here because we've been there. The content contained in this podcast is not a substitute for professional or medical treatment, and it may not represent the views and beliefs of Feast. Always consult a medical professional for medical advice and treatment recommendations.
Hello. Welcome to our episode on The Other Side of the Plate. My name is Laura Cohen, and I'm here with Jenny Gaines. And this week, we are going to talk about something that I think is so important and isn't talked about a lot. And the reason we're going to have this topic today, I'm going to be a little corny, because it's Valentine's, it's February. Well, it's not February yet, but when it gets dropped, it will be February. And since Valentine's Day, that Hallmark holiday for those of us in the United States, let's talk about alignment, caregiver alignment. Sometimes it's called parental alignment, but as we know, not every caregiver are going to be parents. So I like to just say that it's caregiver alignment. And it's something that gets overlooked a lot in discussion, and it's something that is so vitally important in eating disorder treatment, how caregivers are aligned or not aligned. It can make or break a lot, not only the caregiver's relationship, but actually the whole energy and the environment and the trajectory of treatment and recovery. So super duper important that we're bringing this up today.
Yeah, it is, Laura. You're right. It's such a common issue for caregivers, whether they're parents or not. And I think the massive amount of stress that comes into a home and into relationships when an eating disorder enters is just something that is going to impact everything and everyone. And so if there's even the tiniest little fracture anywhere in any relationship, the eating disorder is really going to put more pressure on that. And you're right, it's not talked about very much. And maybe if there are little things that we can share that can help minimize the impact that eating disorders have on parental relationships. What does alignment mean? And do you have to have alignment? Does it have to be perfect alignment? What can we actually do as caregivers?
I love that you said that, Jenny, because it was actually exactly what I was going to say. I love when our brains think alike. Is I remember when my daughter was diagnosed and I told one of my dear friends, and the first thing she said to me was, oof. Both addiction and eating disorders are two things that absolutely can tear families apart. And any crack in a relationship, it will absolutely wiggle its way in and fracture relationships when it comes into the home. And at the time, I was like, I didn't quite get it because we were literally just the beginning of our journey. But it was so true. I think that if there's any weakness in a relationship, and let's be honest, most relationships, whether it's marriage, companionship, partnership, there's always cracks somewhere. And eating disorders, like it makes those cracks so much bigger. And the eating disorder will also find the cracks. And I think that that's so important, you know, as you had brought it up, to highlight that. But why is alignment so important in eating disorder recovery? And what the heck is alignment? We're using this word and people may be like, I don't even know what you're talking about. So alignment is when the caregivers, it could be the team as well, but we're talking here that the primary caregivers are in alignment, meaning they don't have to agree, right? Alignment does not necessarily mean that you have to completely agree with everything, but you're going to choose to stay on that same path. So let's say, I'm just going to throw an example out there. You've got one parent that really just doesn't think that this is a big deal and just thinks that it's a phase and that their kid, what's the big deal if their kid, you know, doesn't want to eat carbs anymore, that that's actually really good for them to not eat carbs and thinks that this is so silly. And then you've got another parent that absolutely understands how serious of a medical and psychological issue this is. Those would be caregivers that are not in alignment. So if you've got such a misalignment like that, imagine having to do all the hard things and all the heavy lifting you have to do as a caregiver to get to help get your child well when you have such misalignment like that. And the eating disorder will also find the parent or the caregiver that is going to allow their eating disorder to continue. So like in that silly example I gave, if you've got one parent that's like, ah, it's not that big of a deal. What's the big deal? I don't eat carbs either. Like I'm on a keto diet and blah, blah, blah. Well, let's say that the parents aren't living in the same house. Whose house is that kiddo going to want to go to? Or if they're in the same house, you know, where's that kiddo going to want to align more with? So that's where you may start to get some splitting, right? That it's almost like you get that two against one. And that would not be conducive for a healthy recovery environment. So kind of what I had said before, you don't have to agree. Okay, we're not all going to agree. My husband and I definitely did not agree on many, 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 many things during treatment. But one thing we did agree on was that we were going to do whatever it took to get our daughter well. And we knew that we had to act together and be a common front against the eating disorder.
Everything that you said, Laura, really resonated with me. And I think you're looking at two different people if we're talking about parents, whether they're married or they're co-parenting in different households, who probably already have differences, different personalities, different styles of parenting, different beliefs, different understandings of eating disorders. And so finding that common front that you were talking about, that common ground, I mean, even if it's just something as simple as we both love our child and let's start there, like finding anything that you can start with as a foundation and then having that common goal be we want to see our child fully recovered from this eating disorder illness, and all the differences in between are going to come up, and maybe you can find a way to use whatever you're good at for some things and use whatever your partner's good at for other things. But the reason this topic is so important to talk about is because when it's a misalignment, it can really impact everything around eating disorder recovery. It can impact the actual treatment and the ability to recover with the child if one person is standing in the way of that treatment and that recovery. It can really sever the relationship between the caregivers if they are not able to find any common ground. And if they're not even really relating in any way other than to be in a battle about the eating disorder, that can happen. It's going to affect everyone in the house, the siblings, any siblings who are there. That misalignment, just the emotions that come up around that misalignment is going to impact the entire family. It's going to make it harder to communicate with the treatment team, with extended family who care. And it's going to lead to caregivers who already have this massive burden on their shoulders to get this child in treatment and to get this child recovered. It's going to create an easier way for everyone to get burned out. And of course, self-care is a whole nother podcast episode, but part of self-care is probably just paying at least a little bit of attention to your relationships and not getting too caught up in the turmoil that the eating disorder may bring up. So some common disagreement areas, because let's face it, when there's an eating disorder, there are going to be plenty of opportunities for issues in the household. One of them is something Laura already mentioned, and that's just around meals and around who is going to be the one requiring the loved one to eat the meal. Do you have the one who is primarily spending the time with the meals as the parent who is maybe more of the nurturer and isn't going to have a very easy time being really firm with doing what they need to do to get the child to eat enough to gain the weight that they need to gain or to get them to abstain from eating disorder behaviors? And it can be really hard if you are approaching it one way and your partner or your spouse is approaching it another way. So that's one very common disagreement area. The other thing is, how are you going to implement what happens if they don't eat their meal? What consequences are there? If there's someone who just thinks that she tried hard enough or he tried hard enough, let's just let it go for today and we'll start over tomorrow. But the other parent knows that they really need to get these calories in now. We don't want to skip anything. another area where you could just disagree and the eating disorder is kind of forgotten about while you're having your disagreement. All of us come to this situation with different backgrounds and different upbringings. We may have had different parenting styles. What if one of us has a trauma background and this is bringing things up for us? It's going to be hard to be on the exact same page as your partner if you're experiencing this emotionally in a different way. And then there's also, Laura also alluded to this early on about if you're doing keto in your house and you're thinking, I think it's healthy for my child to eliminate carbs from their diet, and your partner is really educated on eating disorders and knows that those carbs are going to be an important part of recovery, that's going to cause all kinds of emotional turmoil too. So those are just some common examples where the eating disorder can really come in and cause a lot of turmoil for the entire family.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. One thing that I saw a lot, or that I felt going through it, and then I would typically see it when you work with families, is usually there's one caregiver that does the burden of the work. It's just the way that it is. It's kind of like parenting, right? One parent usually does the brunt. Maybe one parent works more. One, for whatever reason, parenting styles. And I know in my house, you know, I did 99.9% of everything. And then you're exhausted, you're pissed, you're taking all the stress, you're angry that your spouse isn't doing anything. But the truth is, you feel they can't do it as well as you do it. And it took me a long time to realize that it was okay to give up some of that control if it wasn't done perfectly, because you can become resentful really, really quickly, which I definitely did. So you have to check in with yourself too when you're spinning and you're frustrated and you're exhausted, and then you start taking it out and you're, you know, it could be your spouse, your partner, whatever, really thinking, well, you know, how can I help with this? Because that's not helpful to anyone, because there is going to be one partner that does more. So kind of just knowing that is super important. And also being able to ask for more help and knowing that it's not going to be perfect. You know, my husband would sit through a meal, and Jenna, you'll appreciate this, and you know, he'd be doing a meal with my daughter. I took a break from lunch and I'd come back from where I was and I'd be like, well, what did she eat? I don't know. She did okay. What do you mean you don't know? Like, I want to know, like, how many bites were taken, right? How much was on the plate? I don't know. She seemed to do okay. Like, that wasn't an answer. But that's just the way it was. But you know what? It was one meal. I got out to go take a walk. Like, you have to kind of put things in perspective sometimes. Another part of my lived experience was, as I said, I did the majority of stuff. I was, you know, the medical person. I cooked, I cleaned, I did it all. I was the psychological person. I was the therapist. I was everything. And my husband was the fun guy. Right. So when my daughter was having an absolute meltdown, and I mean, she would have some major meltdowns, and we would get her to a point that she was somewhat calm, then that was time for dad to go take her for a drive. And they would go for a drive, put the windows down and play music and, you know, have fun. And I was like, well, that's great. You know, he gets to go out and have fun. But the truth was, that was really important. Right. That's actually an important job. So instead of being resentful of that, trying to see where, you know, where you, what you guys are good at in the relationship.
That was just a great example, Laura, that you gave about the way you and your husband work together. And I don't know if while you were experiencing it, you experienced it as a really good way for you to be utilizing your strengths and your capacity at the time, that you had the time, it sounds like, to devote to all of those roles that you played for your daughter. I think it can be a place where people can become resentful. And I know my experience is very similar to yours in that I did the bulk of things. My husband at the time was at a point where his work was so demanding that it really was natural for me to take that into my hands and to just do it. But there were times when I think I didn't appreciate what you just said about your husband, which is he stepped in into a role that was really important, that was needed, that maybe didn't take as much time, but it was so helpful to you and to your daughter. And I think looking back, and what I would encourage caregivers who are listening to this to do is step back a little bit. We're experiencing all of this and we probably don't have time to communicate it to our partner, But what must it be like for them to be experiencing that, especially if they don't know as much as you do about the eating disorder or they're not as involved as you are? Is there a way to acknowledge the contribution they are making? When we did that episode with Kevin, Laura, I remember him saying, make sure and thank the person who is maybe not the primary role, but is there as the supporting role. And don't take that for granted and really appreciate that. So my husband's also very fun. So I'm going to share one lived experience story. He was really good at distracting at the table. And I ended up totally changing my parental standards in order for my husband to bring in what I would consider probably somewhat inappropriate videos to show the family around the dinner table to distract my daughter while she was trying to get through a meal. And at the time, I had a 10-year-old son, and I was like, I just don't know. I don't know. But you know what? It's working. He's really good at distracting. He's really good at getting a smile or a laugh from her when I was just focused on the serious stuff. And so I think at the time, I didn't appreciate it enough. And maybe during it would have been a good time to take inventory. Like, who am I? What is my style like? And what am I doing that's a strength for this journey? And who is my partner? And what is he or she doing that is actually contributing to this?
Absolutely. I agree with all of that. Our significant others, the spouses, we have to be thankful for the things that they do. It's not going to be perfect. Even our husbands that just like to have fun. That's part of it. And sometimes I put myself in my daughter's shoes. Like, instead of being resentful of that, put myself in her shoes that, you know what, it's nice if they can get that from someone else. It doesn't matter who it is, right? It could be a grandparent. It could be anyone, right? Because it's so easy to just get into that, like, I do everything and look, that person over there gets fun. But for that person who's getting the fun, that's so, so important. There's not a lot of joy going on in their lives right now. Other people I want to bring up is there could be alignment issues, not only with the caregiver who's in the home, but it could be with grandparents. It could be with aunts, uncles, friends. Let's say they play a very big role in the support. Teachers and coaches, I'll get to in a minute. And definitely want to touch upon divorced or separated co-parents, because I have a lot to say about that. Grandparents can play a fantastic role. Some people are really blessed to have that in their house. That, you know, grandma can do a meal or can be part of it, or grandpa, whoever. I also saw in practice a lot of challenges with grandparents. Sometimes it was cultural. Sometimes it was just the age. You know, grandparents, you know, were a little bit easier. They wanted to coddle sometimes a little bit more. They didn't think it was as big of a deal. Definitely a lot of body comments. Some of that, again, I allude to culture. Those are a little more challenging. I worked with a lot of families who didn't want to tell grandparents because it would worry them too much. So there's, you know, and sometimes grandma could be in the house too. So it got a little wonky. So grandparents, you know, really just, again, at the end of the day, you need to stand up for your kid and what your kid needs. And if grandma or grandpa or aunt, uncle, whatever, are not going to help with recovery, you need to be able to get in there and be that block, because it could be really harmful. So let's say you have a meal with grandma 3 times a week, which is fantastic and lovely, but then you can't enforce the rules because grandma doesn't want to see the kid upset. Well, those meals may have to stop for a little bit, right? So it's really choosing the recovery sometimes over those relationships. Teachers and coaches, this is a big one. And one that, you know, unfortunately, parents or caregivers really have to step in at times. If let's say we'll use dance because I know one of my kids dance, not mine with an eating disorder, but I was very into that world, or gymnastics. And I know Jenny's daughter danced. So we can use, you know, those coaches. And there's different studios or different coaches or different teams that are really helpful in recovery. And there's ones that just aren't. You know, maybe they go to dance class and that teacher's berating other students for what they look like, right? Like, that may be somewhere where you may need to step in, or they're talking about healthy eating and this and that before a competition, and really just knowing what's going on. But teachers and coaches, because they can be such role models, sometimes it can be really harmful. So just being aware of that. But if you can use them, it's fantastic. Like my daughter's gymnastics coach was great. So she was able to come into the treatment team, and she would talk sometimes to our dietitian and know exactly what my daughter was able to do. I want to spend a couple of minutes on divorced co-parents, maybe partners, maybe they've never been married, whatever the case may be. I actually worked with a lot of divorced parents or co-parents that often worked better than married couples living in the same home, which was so lovely to see at times. I would have dads on their lunch break, you know, maybe in their work van, with their helmets on and everything, still joining sessions. And it's so important if they, I'm going to say dads, because that's who they were in these situations. But when I would see two parents show up, no matter what, it was, and it's not always possible. I'm not saying, hey, if you're not in a situation that don't have it, then obviously we could talk about that. But when you could have both parents show up to sessions, it's so important, or you know, to treatment team meetings or anything, because then they really would see what's going on. And we also know that recovery has a higher chance when you've got both parents really involved and tuned in. Because the eating disorder likes to see that, wow, my parents or my loved ones are really going to be here to support me. So just because you're not married or live in the same house doesn't mean that you can't do this together, because I saw it happen so beautifully. I also saw the opposite. I was just telling Jenny before we hit record that I had a couple of families, one that's in particular in my head, that they had so many issues between in their relationship. This happened to be in a divorced family. There were so many interpersonal challenges between them that this poor kiddo's entire treatment, with all the providers, whether it's a therapist, the dietitian, everyone, all it was managing the parents. They were fighting with each other in every session. One parent completely thought that this was ridiculous, and the mother wanted to take it more seriously, and to the point that there was legal things that were brought in with this. And all we kept saying all through it as a treatment team was, this poor kid, we're not focusing on the eating disorder, because we're spending so much time with these parents fighting with each other. And we would even try to say that, but it was there was so much emotion on every session. And I say this really to explain that if you find yourself, you know, let's say you're co-parenting with someone who you just can't stand, right? And it's going to happen, right? It's going to happen. Is there any way to try to overlook the personal stuff and every comment they make and they, you know, he makes or she makes or they make, and try to really just focus on your loved one, your child, because it really just takes away from recovery. And it's just a big distraction. It's just such a big distraction when you're spending so much time fighting with each other, or the team is spent fighting, you know, navigating all of this. This is probably going to be the hardest thing you'll ever do as caregivers. Eating disorder recovery is so hard. Give yourself some grace, but also at the end of the day, try to remember that it's the treatment and your kid's recovery at the end of it. If there's anything you can do just to try to put all those other differences aside, as well as talking about, you know, people who co-parent that aren't living in the same house, and we're talking about meals, really trying to have the same quote unquote rules at each house, because this is where the eating disorder will want to go to either mom's house or dad's house if the rules are really lenient one way or another. So really, really, really trying to make it consistent across the board. I know easier said than done. And then you get step-parents involved and all of that. And it just, and I've actually had step-parents come that were, I've had families I work with that I've had like five people at a session that they all really co-parent really well together. So it can happen.
Yeah, Laura, thanks for highlighting all the different dynamics that can be going on, all the different types of parenting, co-partnering. If you really think about it, it's no wonder it's so complex. I mean, eating disorders are so complex. Then you put the relationships on top of that, and you're trying to reach common ground. But I love the reminder, Laura, that you gave. Let's not forget about the child here. Let's not forget about the loved one that you were hoping is going to recover from this eating disorder. What can we do? What strategies can we do right now, today, wherever we are in this, to get more aligned? And we don't have to be perfectly aligned. And I bet even with all of those things that you described that you saw, Laura, that even when there were difficult relationships, that it's still possible to get to recovery. We're not talking about perfect alignment here. We're talking about finding enough common ground that you can take actions toward that recovery. And so one thing that comes to mind for me that I think is probably step one is for everyone who cares about that person to learn as much as they can about eating disorders. Because if you don't understand what eating disorders are and how they can impact the short-term and long-term health of your loved one and what treatment and recovery looks like, it's going to be really hard to understand why your spouse or your partner or your other loved one is behaving the way they're behaving. Because like Laura and I know we were both the ones that jumped in there and learned everything and started doing things. I was responsible for all of the meals and snacks and helping my daughter through all of that. But I didn't know a lot in the beginning. And it's almost like you get a degree in eating disorders when you have a child with an eating disorder. But if you're the one that's spending all the time learning and then the other person doesn't know as much as you know, it's really kind of unfair to then judge them for them not knowing. So I think giving some grace for that and maybe even being willing to ask, can I be the one that takes the lead here? But if you want to learn, here are the resources that I used. And Feast has wonderful resources for that. Feast 30 Days, you've heard me recommend it so many times on this podcast. We will link that, as always, in the show notes. That's a really good starting place for anyone. Laura mentioned that this isn't just the relationship between parents. It goes beyond that. The relationship with the coaches, with grandparents, with other people that care about your child. They also can become educated and learn more about eating disorders, and it makes alignment that much easier. Just being on the same page with the education is a great head start. Also, can you both be involved in the treatment? Talking to the treatment team together instead of having to be the like one that relays everything. Like we did this today. I don't know. What was that like for you, Laura?
Meeting together with the treatment team is so huge, so paramount.
It just really helps you all get on the same page. And then you know that you're working toward the same thing, which helps tremendously with alignment. And then another thing, and I did not do this, and looking back, it would have been really helpful. What are the main things that are important here? So you don't get caught up arguing about all the little tedious things that probably aren't as important for your child's recovery. Can you agree on some shared goals? Can you agree on these are our top three non-negotiables? Write them down, put a magnet on the fridge with those three non-negotiables to remind everyone. These are the things we're working toward. If it's not something you want your child to see, you can put it somewhere where you and your partner can see it, or you each have it in your phone or something. Going back to when there tends to be a little bit of a conflict or tension there and you're not on the same page, just reminding yourself, I think that can be just like a really easy strategy to use. And you can also write a family recovery plan. This is something that if you do in conjunction with your treatment team, it just allows everyone to focus on the exact same things, even with all that other noise going on around you. And so that can be just a really great instrument, especially if you have the support of your treatment team to help you take stock of what's going on and where you need to go.
Yeah, I was really big in my lived experience with we got blessed that we, after a while, had a good treatment team. And sometimes, I hope my husband doesn't listen to this episode, but I'd be like, oh gosh, he has to be on the session, because he would ask questions that I would get super frustrated with. And I'd do a lot of deep breathing on those meetings. But I was really happy that being able to have the team was important. With that being said, also being able to utilize the team, right? So if one caregiver is not understanding things, instead of you always being the bad guy, use the team. This is what the dietitian is saying. And then have the dietitian, maybe your family recovery plan, you know, to what you said, Jenny, is have them write out what the goals are. So it's not coming from just you per se, right? So you're bringing that team into it. So you're not looking like the enforcer, especially if there's some disagreements in the relationship. We use the team for everything. It was kind of like how I always said to my kids, if you need an excuse, blame it on your parents, even if you have to make it up. Oh, I did the same thing with the treatment team. I'd be like, oh, well, Liz, who's a therapist, Liz said that, da, 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 and I would just use that if we needed it. But what do you do? Let's talk for a couple minutes about handling disagreements when your kiddo is right there, right? Like, what are you going to do? You know, we would like to avoid this as much as possible. And we know that it's going to happen, right? I mean, we're all human. So it could be that your kiddo comes up to you and is like, well, mom or dad or, you know, whatever said that I don't need to eat all my, I don't know, my dinner. I only need to eat two ribs. And you're sitting there like, or even better, you know, dad said that I could start going to hockey practice. And you kind of know that that's not, maybe dad wants you to start going to hockey practice, right? But that's not what, as a team, we had talked about. Maybe your kid hadn't hit their goals yet and they're not finishing a meal. And that's stuff that I could see in real time. Come on, dad, we're going to go to hockey. You said that we could go right now. And mom's sitting there going, they've eaten two bites of food. They can't go to hockey. And dad's like, there's a big game this week. We got to go to hockey. You know, and that could definitely happen, you know, at the table in front of your kid. So it may be that you got to bring your spouse in the other room. You know, we're going to go talk about this. Like, you guys are still the adults. We're going to go talk about this and we'll get back to you. And trying to stay aligned that that's what you're going to do in those disagreements. It's also okay to show that you're not perfect. There's going to be some disagreements and you can come back and apologize. You know, mom and dad talked afterwards and this is kind of the way it's going to be. When you truly don't agree, and it's going to happen, as I said before, bring it to the treatment team.
Yeah.
Let them help be the assuming you trust the treatment team. And as Jenny said, define the non-negotiables versus flexibility. Sometimes you got to be flexible at things. I was not good at that. I wanted to know exactly how many bites my daughter ate. And sometimes it was okay if I didn't. But if that was like, you know, but if my, you know, partner was doing, you know, 2 to 3 meals a day, well, then I needed to know, you know. So learning to be a little bit flexible, also not micromanaging is really important too, because that can very much belittle the other caregiver. I know we run into that a lot. And sometimes this stuff comes up way after your kiddo's in a good place that you're trying to repair part of relationships. And I learned a lot from that. No, I didn't say thank you enough. I wasn't, you know, I was too hypercritical about things. But when you're so stressed and you're managing it all, that tends to happen a lot.
I think you're right, Laura, that repair may need to happen even after your loved one is in a good place. And to possibly be prepared for that, it's just really hard for there not to be fallout when a family goes through something like this. And so it's completely understandable to have couples counseling after this. Or even during it, to repair whatever happened during this really, really difficult, challenging time. Like you said, one of the hardest things, if not the hardest thing that you've ever gone through or will ever go through. And I think it's normal to just, I mean, to normalize it, that it's going to be really hard. And it's not going to be that everything is going to go smoothly all the time. And that's okay, that you can come out on the other side with your relationships intact. And that you can do that repair work if you need to after.
And the reality is I did see families that wound up separating afterwards. The problems were there beforehand, right? This just made them worse. Sometimes it was just the right choice. You know, they waited until their kiddo was in a better place. But it definitely can happen. We're talking about, you know, doing, you know, it could be couples therapy or family therapy. The one thing I would say about that is making sure that if, let's say you're going to couples therapy, making sure that the person you go to therapy doesn't do any splitting with the eating disorder too. Because you could have a provider that really doesn't understand eating disorders. Maybe they've got their own stuff. Because again, we're all humans before any provider comes in. And you don't want, let's say you wind up going to a marriage counselor who is very fat phobic and has their own things, and they're hearing about what you're doing. Let's say you're doing FBT and you're adding all the cream and the butter, and dad's freaking out about or mom's freaking out about it, and then you get a a marriage counselor who's kind of agreeing with it, you need to make sure they understand what you're doing in your house and that their beliefs don't get into it. I know you think this stuff wouldn't happen, but again, they're all human. What else would be helpful? Cultural differences. That's a big one too. I started talking a little bit about that. I alluded to about it with grandparents, but it still could be this generation. You know, it's just different ways that maybe mom does everything or dad does everything. Or there's a lot of body talk culturally. Maybe in certain families, mental health stigma. There are some cultures that don't like to talk about this stuff, that it's very foreign to them. I actually worked with one family. This was interesting enough to share this. Dad was from Africa. They lived in New York, but dad grew up in Africa and grew up in a little village with poverty and starvation and all the things. He'll tell you he's very successful, lived in New York City, lived a very, very, very nice lifestyle, but that wasn't his background. And when his daughter had an eating disorder, he didn't understand it. He was like, I don't understand how someone would choose to not eat. Like, to me, to have food in the house is a blessing. You know, that doesn't go away. And he just could not wrap his head around why someone would starve themselves. And it was very interesting to, you know, to see it all transpire. But you had to take that in account, that that's his trauma and trauma experiences, whatever you want to call it, his culture, everything coming to the table was, how could this happen? Right? Like, just didn't even understand the whole thing. And it was very interesting. Along with mental health stigma, what I said before, that there's cultures that they don't talk about going to see a therapist or having any issues like this.
And then also talking about that, Laura, there are some cultures where appearance and appearing a certain way is really important. So when there's maybe a target weight that's set so high and there's that maybe fat phobia, but it's also combined with a cultural norm, that can be pretty hard. And if you have one parent that comes from that culture and another that doesn't, then that is going to be hard to align on too. And so there are just so many ways that with eating disorders, there can become these conflicts. So I think talking about parental alignment or just relationship alignment, regardless of what the relationship, is really important. So I appreciate you sharing the cultural example.
Yeah. And, you know, why are we talking about this? Like, why is it so important to talk about alignment? As I said, it's not talked about as much, but the reasons why is because if you've got misalignment, it could be harming recovery, right? And that's our ultimate goal here. As we talked about, you could have the splitting, whether the splitting comes in a treatment team, it also comes between caregivers. And the more caregivers you get, the more splitting there can be. You throw in a stepmother, a stepdad, an aunt, a grandparent, a coach. You know, you really want to make sure. I mean, you got to get everybody on the same page the best you can. And again, they don't have to agree. They just have to agree for this is what the goals may be. And sometimes putting those goals in writing, like we said, is going to be the most helpful thing. Stalled progress. I talked about that. If you're so busy fighting with each other, then it's taking away from progress. And the eating disorder is going to love that, by the way. Or one parent gets really pissed off and just withdraws. I've seen that too. Like, forget it. What, you're taking over. You're doing everything. I could do nothing right. I'm just not going to do anything. And that's where I go back to, which could have easily happened in my own lived experience, is finding the things that the other person is good at and appreciating that and leaning into that. I've had couples that maybe just one caregiver does all the food shopping. Maybe they don't do anything else, but they do the food shopping. That's the one thing that the other person who's doing all the work just finds so stressful. Yeah, great. Go do the food shopping. Whatever it is it's just, you really just, these are the things that will harm recovery. And then we talked about professional help. You know, bring in the couples therapy, the family therapy, the treatment team intervention if needed.
And then also, I think just in relationships in general, we get so busy with what we're doing. And when you add an eating disorder to what is already a really busy, stressful life, it's just going to be that much harder. But even just getting your calendars out with each other, whether you live in the same household or not, and just penciling or put it in with pens, you can't erase it, and it's a priority in your calendar, a 10-minute check-in. Are we still on the same page with these non-negotiables? Are we still on the same page with these goals? Can you go to this appointment this week? Just a check-in, maybe look each other in the eye, and together, just whatever united front you can create in that short period of time, just as a strategy, I think that could really help. Because otherwise, it's so much coming at you, at everyone. So much is coming at everyone. Everyone's doing the best they can. And it's a really stressful situation.
Yeah, actually, that was one tip I was going to give, that the couples that I saw, the caregivers that I saw have the most success. And I would ask them, like, or maybe they would tell me, like, they literally would say, we do 10-minute check-ins a day, or whatever it may be. It may be before our coffee, before the day, we wake up, and at 5:30 in the morning, we're taking those 10 minutes because the nighttime gets wonky. So it's usually the morning. And we just kind of would set the day, set the intentions. But if they could check in every day, a couple of days a week, once a week, whatever you want to do, it really, really was helpful. As well on the flip side as taking breaks from recovery mode. Don't forget the relationship for those of you that do have a spouse that you're with or a partner that you're committed to. Trying to find those times for just you two is super important. Even if you can just get away, maybe someone can do one meal. Again, doesn't need to be perfect. Obviously, we want this when your loved one is medically stable, but just making it that point for you guys to connect in, and you're not going to talk about that eating disorder during the meal. It's really hard, really, really hard to do because that's what your primary focus is. But if you could just do something, even if you go to a movie, maybe you don't even talk to each other, but you're able to just sit there together and just, of course, and hopefully you don't go to a movie that has all kinds of fat phobia in it. But anyway, or just do something is super, play a game. I don't know, whatever you guys like. So, so important.
Yeah, that's really important. And then we can't really talk about this topic without talking about, what do you do if you're trying all these things, you're doing the very best you can, and that alignment just isn't happening, and you are noticing that it's impacting the recovery of your child. I mean, sometimes all the best efforts, it's still not possible to find that alignment. What do you do in that situation? And I know that there is sometimes one parent or one caregiver who just basically takes it on, takes the lead, and maybe no longer tries to get the other person to learn about eating disorders, no longer tries to get them on board, maybe keeps them out of the treatment appointments if that's what's going to be best for the child. It's so personal. This is like such a personal journey. And so anything that we are offering here, it just may not apply to you. And we completely understand that. And this is something that Laura and I go back to a lot, is that you do really have to trust yourself on this. Even in this stressful situation, if you know that any more effort toward creating that alignment with whoever it is that you're working with, whether it's a current spouse or someone that you are divorced from, or someone who's a partner that's not currently in the same home with you, whatever the case may be, accepting that I'm going to need to go this pretty much alone here and then move forward from there in order to protect your loved one and to minimize any harm that's being done in the recovery process. Laura, what do you think?
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah, whatever you need to do. Sometimes you just need to, everything we said, you may listen to it and be like, yeah, well, that ain't going to happen. Nope. My ex, that just throw everything we just said away and do what you need to do to protect your kid in the end, if that's what needs to happen, because that's really the ultimate goal, you know, is just that protection. Sometimes there are, you know, partners that are just, it's just too challenging to have them involved. Maybe they've got their own eating disorder or their own disorder thoughts. Maybe they have a trauma history. They can't handle the discomfort that comes out. So yeah, always being honest with what's going on is super, super, super important. So let's talk about some takeaways. So what are some actionable steps that you can do? We talked about putting together a recovery plan. That may just be you and your partner sitting down and just being like, okay, these are the things, you know, maybe there's some things you disagree on. Okay, well, let's find a place where we can kind of have some middle ground here. Also, some things that are non-negotiable. If you live in two different houses, I'm sure we could have a whole episode about that. But live in two different houses, what do the rules look like? What's the follow through? What does the handoff look like? More importantly, sometimes I come from a divorced house. So when I was growing up, and it's always, you know, one spouse is taken over from the other. So, well, what happened on your shift? So really being able to do that. Maybe come up with three non-negotiables. Reaching out to your treatment team if you feel that you want to get everyone on the same page. Often the therapist or the dietitian, maybe you could do a whole team meeting. We did a lot of those, can help get you back on the same page, or at least help you come up with non-negotiables in a situation where possibly it's very challenging to do that with your partner. What about you, Jenny? What would your key takeaways be?
Yeah, those are really great takeaways. And I think just start wherever you are and find that foundational piece that you do agree on, which is probably we really love our child and we really want her or him to recover from this illness, and start there and just go back there anytime it gets really heated. And I think you already said it, Laura, but just to remember that being aligned doesn't mean that you're perfectly in sync with everything. You don't have to have a really perfect alignment in order for your child to have a recovery. And we know recovery isn't linear. This underlines that, just this topic. This is messy too. And it can look like a long and winding road, and it can still get you to recovery. So if anyone who's listening to this is struggling in their relationships to find common ground, to just keep taking that one little baby step forward and to keep hoping and believing in your loved one's recovery, those would be my takeaways.
And I just want to leave us with something positive, since all we've talked about is how challenging it can be and how it can tear apart this and that. It also can bring you closer together with your partner. So I don't want to forget that. Sometimes through bad things, there are silver linings. My husband and I, it was not easy, but we did learn to communicate definitely afterwards a lot better. So there are ways that you can get closer and really appreciate other people in this journey with you. And lastly, just remember, you do not have to do this perfectly. You just have to keep doing it together.
Thank you so much, Laura. And we're excited that our next episode is going to be during Eating Disorder Awareness Week. And we are going to have a special guest, Natalia Trees, who is going to talk to us specifically about ARFID and what the caregiver's role is in ARFID treatment. So I think it's going to be a really educational episode, and we hope you will join us then. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us at the other side of the plate. If today's episode gave you hope or guidance, we invite you to explore more resources and peer support at feast-ed.org. Remember, you are never alone. For more conversations of hope and help for families facing eating disorders, please join us for our next episode.